A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, in a black and white film, a shield appears inscribed with the letters WB. Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated executive producer Jack L. Warner presents Bette Davis as Miss Lily Moffat in The Corn is Green. This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Beth Malden and Melissa Carlson. Read by Wendy Sacchichini. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. Titles continue with Nigel Bruce, Reese Williams, Rosalind Ivan, Mildred Dunnock, Arthur Shields, Gwyneth Hughes, Billy Roy, and Thomas Loudon, and introducing John Dahl and Joan Loring. Screenplay by Casey Robinson and Frank Cavett. From the stage play by Emlyn Williams, produced by Herman Shumlin. Copyright 1945, Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated. Music by Max Steiner, produced by Jack Chertok, directed by Irving Rapper. Words appear. Glensarno, a small village in a remote Welsh countryside, 1895. Now a horse-drawn cart rolls along a dirt road. The driver tips his hat to a man walking out of a stone house. Mr. Jones checks his pocket watch, then heads back inside.
It won't be long now, Miss Ronbury. But once the train from London is untied.
You arranged for the trap at the station, Mr. Jones?
I did, and I notified the squire as well.
The colonel is sure to be on time. Military discipline. Well, Sarah?
Are you finished now?
Is everything spick and span?
I made the bed lovely, and I dust.
Well, that'll be all, dear. The colonel is bound to have his own manservant.
Then I better have another sit down in my post office.
What is the matter with your post office?
It has not had a letter in 7 weeks. Nobody but me can write, and no good me writing, because nobody but me can read.
You see, anybody in Wales will tell you that the people in this part of the countryside are practically barbarians. I can't think why a colonel should elect to come and live in a place like this.
I've never seen so many books.
Oh, I do hope the curtains won't seem too feminine. I chose them with such care. I am frightened of a spinning wheel, too, and the china. His own furniture, so distinctive. The desk. And the waste paper basket, so virile.
A waste paper basket that is virile. Are you hoping the colonel will live up to his waste paper basket?
That's horrid, Mr. Jones. Even for a Welshman.
Mr. Jones carries a stack of books up a stepladder, then sets them on a shelf. Miss Ronbury hands him some more.
What are those words you're singing?
The wicked shall burn in hell.
Her eyes widen. Outside, two men on horseback ride up to the stone house. The older man, with a bushy white mustache, wears a bowler hat. The younger man wears a cap. They dismount.
Come in.
The younger man opens the door.
The squire.
Miss Ronbury primps her frilly blouse.
Mr. Trenderby.
Delicious lady.
Squire.
Delicious surprise and a merry afternoon to you, as our ancestors used to say. Good day to you.
Good afternoon, sir.
On the ladder, Mr. Jones spills some books.
No ceremony with me. And no sign of the new inhabitant.
Any moment now, I think.
Well, let's hope the new fellow's all right.
Why?
Well, I mean, say, all these books. It isn't possible that one fellow could have read them all, or ever will.
Outside, a wagon approaches.
They're here.
At last.
The trap with all their luggage. Make good time from the station, too.
What does he look like, Mr. Jones? Young? Middle-aged?
No sign of any colonel yet. Only the trap driver and two women.
Two women.
Come on, Bessie, get a move on. Help me with these parcels.
Outside.
What are we being brought here for? I hate it, I do.
Shut up. This place is a clinker, that's what.
And don't it save us from the law? I hate it anyhow.
If we'd have stayed in London, I couldn't have that red dress I had my eye on, I could.
You're an ungrateful girl, that's what you are. You behave yourself. Here we have the chance to live in a lap of luxury, and you go bleating about a red dress. Oh, it's going to be lovely here.
Smells.
Hush. Now you go down to the station and get the big trunks. Oh, these embers are a mess.
The girl walks into the house.
Who are you?
Oh, I never speak until I'm spoken to.
Oh, well, speak up now, my girl.
Bessie, what is the name?
anybody could say I really got a name at all.
She looks around.
Is this Pengarth House?
It is.
Oh, it's not such a match, is it?
Well, what's wrong with it?
What's good about it? Bit of a poser for you, that one, wasn't it now?
Look here, my girl, we'll have none of your impudence.
Do you speak English?
I do.
Then be a dear and hold this.
Do you know that creature, my girl? Who is she?
My mummy. I never had no daddy.
Oh, sorry. Seems a pity.
We all has our cross to bear. Having no daddy is mine. Oh,
strike me pink with their baby.
What are they?
Books.
More books? Look here, my good woman. Is your employer with you?
No. Followed behind most of the way. Ought to be here by now, I'll ever see.
Mrs. Waddy walks outside.
Oh, here we are. Kelly Hall. Thought we had lost you.
What a beautiful country.
I had hoped to catch up with you, but that last hill proved to be too much.
A prim woman wearing a straw hat pushes a bicycle through the front door. Miss Ronbury gapes.
Good afternoon.
How do you do?
There are a few nippers at the gate, so I thought I'd better bring Priscilla inside. Watty, can you take care of her?
Now, come on, girl, give us a hand. Don't stand there getting in the mischief.
It's bigger than I expected. So this is my house.
No, it isn't.
Oh? Well, isn't this Pengarth the name of the building, I mean?
Yes, it is.
Well, that's right. It was left to me by my uncle, Dr. Moffat. I'm Miss Moffat.
Miss Ronbury glances at Mr. Jones.
I take it you're the Miss Ronbury that so kindly corresponded with me.
But surely those letters we received were written by a man.
Well, if they were, I've been grossly deceiving myself for a great many years. Now, that's very interesting. Why did it never occur to you that I might be a woman?
Well, for one thing, the paper was not scented.
And surely you signed your name rather oddly.
Oh, my initials, L.C. Well, you see, I never felt that Lily Christabel really suited me.
And I thought it meant Lieutenant Colonel. But there was a military title after it.
M.A., Master of Arts.
Arts? Do you mean the degree my father bought for me when I came down from the Varsity?
The very same, except that I was at Aberdeen and worked jolly hard for mine.
A female M.A.? And how long's that going to last?
Well, quite a long while, I hope, considering the fact we've been waiting for it for 2,000 years.
Are you saved?
Miss Moffat eyes Mr. Jones.
I beg your pardon?
Are you church or chapel?
Well, I really don't know.
He furrows his brow.
And now that you know all about me, what do you do?
What? I'm afraid I don't do anything.
Sir Treverby owns the hall.
Really? I've never had much to do with the landed gentry. Interesting.
Au revoir, dear lady. Dear Jones.
On his way out, he looks back. Grabbing his hat and cane, he leaves.
Nobody could say I've made a conquest there.
Miss Moffat strides into another room, passing a desk cluttered with books.
This is not a bad little room.
Mrs. Waddy returns, putting on an apron.
Where's his lordship?
Took offense and left.
Took offense? At her? Well, I'm jiggered. What do you think of it, eh? Ain't she a clinker?
Well, she is unusual, is she not?
She's a clinker, that's what. Terrible strong-willed, of course, terrible. Get her into mischief, I keep telling her. Would bring me here, I said no, I said. Not with my past, I said.
Your past?
But what with her taking me up and now I've joined the corpse, it's all plotted out.
The corpse?
The militant righteous corpse. Ran into them in Limehouse, I did, singing and praying and collecting full blast. And I've been a different woman since.
Are you saved?
Yes, I am.
So am I. Ain't it lovely?
What was your past?
Light fingers.
Light fingers? Do you mean stealing?
Everywhere I went. Terrible. Pennies, stockings, brooches, spoons, tiddly anything. And every time there was a do, everything went. And I always knew it was me. I was just telling them about my trouble.
Well, don't tell them anymore.
No, Mum.
I like the former tenant's taste. Plenty of bookshelves.
The volumes are all dusted.
And Sarah Pugh has fixed the upstairs.
You arranged everything quite splendidly, I do thank you. And now the garden. Shall we have a look at it?
If you'd like.
I'll join you in a moment.
In the kitchen.
I'm hungry. You've got an appetite like a horse.
I haven't. It's a fine big kitchen, Watty. Everything in order?
I haven't seen no mice yet.
Good. When the luggage comes up from the station, have them take it upstairs, will you?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, we'll have tea, Watty, whenever you're ready.
All right, ma'am.
Outside.
I knew I wasn't wrong in coming here. Somehow this place has something so exactly right about it.
These will be friendly for your room.
Fresh flowers.
That was nicely phrased, Mr. Jones. I've heard that you Welshmen had no sentiment.
Like all other people, the Welsh too can see beauty.
Of course they can. I promise I shan't make the same mistake again. Tell me, Mr. Jones, does this barn belong to the property?
No, Miss Moffat.
Is it in use now?
No, ma'am.
Oh, splendid. What's that singing?
Boys coming home from the mine.
Boys, you say?
You can see them in a minute coming over the bridge.
I should like to. I should like very much to look at children who can sing after a day's work in a coal mine.
Beyond the side gate, a group of miners crosses a low stone bridge. A young boy rests his elbow on another boy's shoulder, their faces and hands blackened by coal dust. The miners wear floppy peddler's caps and dark wool jackets with scarves loosely tied around their necks. A couple of boys swing their lunch pails as they walk. Holding her bouquet of fresh flowers, Miss Moffat watches the miners pass, her brow knit. With her curled hair pulled back, she wears a fitted jacket over a high-collared blouse. Her face softens as the boys continue down the dirt road, away from Pengarth House. She lowers her eyes.
They burst into song on the slightest provocation. You mustn't take any notice.
Miss Moffat sits.
Tell me, Mr. Jones, within a radius of 5 miles, how many families are there around here?
About 40 families in the village and 15 in the farms around.
Many children?
What age?
Up to 16 and 17.
Around here, they're only children until they are 12. Then they are sent away to the mine, and in 1 week, they are old men.
I see. How many can read and write?
Next to none.
Next to none. I wonder whoever started the ridiculous rumor that this was a civilized world.
They walk to the house.
Well, since it's the only world we've got to live in, I suppose we have to make the best of it.
Too easy, Mr. Jones. Much too soft and easy. When I was quite a young girl, I looked the world in the eye and decided I didn't like it. I saw poverty and disease, ignorance and injustice, and in a small way, I've always done what I could to fight them. So now that I've had the good fortune to come into this house with a little money, what could I do better than to continue to fight them? Especially with you two to help me. Watty, would you put these in water, please?
Yes, ma'am.
I? Yes, you, Miss Runbury. Sit down, won't you? I used to meet friends of yours at lectures in London. You live alone, you have just enough money, you're not badly educated, and time lies heavy on your hands. Isn't that so?
Not at all. When the proper gentleman appears?
Oh, no, Miss Runbury. If you're a spinster well on in her 30s, he's lost his way and isn't coming. Why don't you face the fact and enjoy life the way I do?
When did you give up hope? Oh, what a horrid expression.
Well, I can't recall ever having had any hope. Visitors used to take a long look at my figure and say, she's going to be the clever one.
But a woman's only future is to marry and fulfill the duties.
Nonsense. I'd have made a shocking wife anyway.
But haven't you ever been in love?
I have never talked to a man for more than 5 minutes in my life without wanting to box his ears. Which brings me to you, Mr. Jones.
My conscience is as clear as the snow.
I'm sure it is, but I've inquired about you too. Your father was a grocer with just enough money to send you through grammar school, with the result that you're educated beyond your sphere and yet fail to qualify for the upper classes. You feel frustrated and fall back on being saved. Am I right?
It is such a terrible thing you have said that I will have to think it over.
Do. But in the meantime, would you two like to stop moping and be very useful to me?
Useful?
Yes. I'm going to start a school.
A school? What for?
What for? You see these books, hundreds of them, and something wonderful to read in each and every one. These nippers are to be cut off from that forever, are they? Why? Just because they happen to be born penniless in an uncivilized country?
You're right.
The ordinary children, you mean?
Yes, my dear. The ordinary children, who came into the world by exactly the same process as you and I.
But I couldn't teach those children. I couldn't. They smell.
Well, if we'd never been taught to wash, so would we. We'll put them under the pump.
But I have an enormous house to run. And all the flowers to do.
We'll shut it up except for one room and let the flowers die a natural death. Mr. Jones, I want you too.
I am a solicitor's clerk at Gwynegam, and I earn 33 shillings per week.
I'll give you 34, and your lunch.
But those children are in the mine earning money. How can they...
I'll pay their parents the few miserable pennies they get out of it. And when I've finished with you, you won't have time to worry about snapping up a husband, and you won't have time to be so pleased you're saved. Well?
Mr. Jones smiles.
I do not care if you are not Chapel. I am with you.
Now, several young miners gather around an announcement posted on a building. Enroll now for Miss Moffat's school at Pengarth House on Glensarno Road. Reading, writing, spelling, arithmetic. Now, in a montage, a hand pens names onto an enrollment record. Students get writing slates, chalk, and books. One student writes numbers on a slate. Another writes the words cat and can. A third student flips through a reading book. Now, sooty-faced miners march across a stone bridge, swinging their arms as they go. A low-lying haze covers the distant valleys and surrounding hills. The miners smile as they sing. In the group, young boys walk alongside older men smoking pipes. As they stride through the countryside, they pass a woman milking a cow. Another woman carrying a bucket of coal waves to them. At a fork in the road, some of the miners veer off, waving goodbye to the others. The main group crosses another stone bridge arched over a tranquil stream. They pass a farmer shaving a woolly sheep. A small girl holding a lamb waves to them. The miners approach Pengarth House. Some of them stride through the front gate as the others continue along the dirt road. One young man swings in the gate, then puts his arm around another tall miner as they stroll up the walkway to the house. Mrs. Waddy answers the door.
Come in. Come on.
The dirty young men enter.
You here again?
This mine with?
I said you here again.
No, miss.
What do you mean, no, miss?
Morgan?
We isn't here again, miss.
What are you, then?
We isn't the same lot which comes in the morning, miss. We is the lot which comes in the evenings.
Well, even after 6 weeks, you all look the same to me. Ma'am!
Yes?
Send more for you. Bring boys and mind you don't blacken the furniture.
The miners sit in the front room. Mr. Jones enters the house carrying a letter.
Good evening, Mr. Jones.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, boys.
I see you and the lady teacher behind the door.
You wait until you see Miss Moffat. She will give you what for.
He leaves.
You wait until you see Miss Moffat. She will give you what for.
In the study.
Miss Ronbury.
Yes, Mr. Jones. These children are so careless.
Where's Miss Moffat?
In her room, I think.
Sarah Pugh gave me this letter for her. It's the one she's been waiting for.
Oh, I'll take it to her immediately.
Miss Ronbury walks into the front room.
Shall we wait, Miss Ronnie Berry?
Miss Moffat will be with you in a minute.
Miss Moffat descends a staircase carrying a rolled-up sheet of paper.
From the management of the mine.
Oh, thank you.
Miss Ronbury hands her the envelope. Miss Moffat opens it, then reads the letter.
The solicitor to the mine owners politely but firmly advises me no children working in the mine can be released above ground.
Oh, how horrid. Surely there must be some way.
They underestimate us.
Miss Moffat gathers her skirt and approaches the miners.
I'll have to keep you waiting, boys, as I must attend to an errand in the village. In the meantime, would you go to the well in the garden and scrub your hands and faces? Through there.
Please, miss, can I have a kiss?
Miss Moffat eyes the young man.
What did you say?
Please, miss, can I have a kiss?
She smiles.
Of course you can.
She smacks his rear end with a rolled-up paper.
I oblige anybody else?
The miners exchange startled looks.
Oh, Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Miss Moffat walks away.
Oh, Mr. Jones, after they've washed themselves, you'd better occupy them with something. Perhaps the writing of a composition.
Any particular subject?
Oh, how I would spend my holiday. That's always reliable.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Come, Miss Ronbury.
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Please, miss, can I have a snake bottom?
How horrifying!
Indeed.
The black-dusted miners race outside. One of them swings from a vine-covered trellis, another crouches on the ground, and two others leapfrog over him. Bessie sits near the barn, twirling her hair tightly around her finger. With her other hand, she feeds a billy goat. At the pump, the miners pour water into wash tubs. Bessie casts a sidelong glance at the young men as they splash each other. Frowning, she walks over to the trellis. The last miner to use a grimy towel playfully throws it at his friend. Mr. Jones walks up beside Bessie, watching the young man.
Mr. Jones, would you like a sweetie?
No, thank you, my little dear. Have you had another walk?
Yes, Mr. Jones. All by myself.
Did you see anybody?
Only a lady and gentleman in the lane. But Mother told me never to look.
Why are you holding your hair like that?
Well, these are my curls. Do you think it's nice?
It is nice, but it is wrong.
I've been curling each one round my finger and holding it tight until it's all right. My finger's aching something terrible. Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Is it true that the school idea isn't going on so well?
Who told you that?
Oh, what have I been talking?
Everything is splendid, Bessie.
Oh, I'm glad. Miss Moffat's been cruel to me.
Cruel to you?
She hides my sweets. And she's a liar, too.
A liar?
Tell me they're bad for me. And it says on the bag that they're nourishing. Oh, she's wicked.
Now, come on, Bessie, and help me with the meat. You can't just stop screaming me all day long.
Her mother smacks her hand at the pump.
Boys, it's time to write the essay.
Yes, Mr. Jones.
You didn't wash very clean.
No, Mr. Jones.
Why not?
Because the water is too cold.
A man tosses a bucket at Mr. Jones and knocks him down. The others help him up.
Mr. Jones, look at his skull.
Yes, it will.
Amy?
Yes. The bell for our school.
A large bell lies on its side. Mr. Jones rings the clapper. Now in town, Miss Moffat and Miss Ronbury ride in a horse-drawn buggy down a cobblestone street and stop outside an office. Miss Moffat hands the reins to Miss Ronbury, then steps down onto the sidewalk.
Plants.
Miss Ronbury hands her the rolled-up paper. Miss Moffat enters the office and shakes hands with an older, stern-faced man. A sign outside reads, Llewellyn Powell Solicitor. Next door, a bartender leads two greyhounds out of his pub.
These are champions indeed.
Let's go to the track and climb them.
They'll never win the race.
Man, you bet me half a sovereign and you lost.
That wasn't a fair race, Thomas. You're daffy.
If you don't pay it, stop tap.
I'll pay tomorrow, lad.
Some miners gather on the sidewalk as the bartender approaches Miss Ronbury.
Good day to you, Miss Ronbury.
Good day, Mr. Thomas.
And how does Miss Moffat prosper in Glansano?
I do not wish to discuss Miss Moffat.
You've taken to fancy airs yourself, Miss Ronbury.
I do not wish to discuss Miss Moffat or myself. Good day, Mr. Thomas.
Good day, Miss Ronbury.
Miss Ronbury looks anxiously through the solicitor's window. Inside, Miss Moffat snatches the plans from Mr. Powell, then walks outside.
Miss Powell and Dad, Masker's time.
Gabby Arasarolo Ruskull, mistress.
That was obviously sent for my benefit. Would you mind translating it for me?
I said, teacher, can I stay in after school?
You don't like the idea of the school.
We do not.
I hardly expected that you would.
Miss Moffat, the squire.
As the squire and his groom approach on horseback, Miss Moffat climbs into her buggy.
You have lost the first round, Miss Ronbury.
Oh, dear.
Take heart. I can be as stubborn as the Welch.
Hello, hello, hello. A jolly good afternoon to you, teacher. As a matter of fact, I was on my way to court.
All right, Rogers, take his head with it.
Yes.
I have a most important message for you, my dear madam, from a gent who's been lunching with me today, Sir Herbert Vesey.
Yes, to be quick.
He has definitely decided that he's no use for the barn, but he does not see it as a school, and under no circumstances will he let it as such to anyone. Therefore, he must regretfully decline, etc., etc., etc.
But he implied in his letter he'd be willing to sell.
Then some bigwig must have made him change his mind, mustn't he?
You?
My dear madam, I shall be blunt. I'm not going to have any more of this confounded hanky-panky in my village.
Your village?
My village. I'm no braggart, but I'll have you know that everything you can see from your windows, you haven't got a bad view, I own. I may add that all my life I've done my level best for the villagers. They call me Squire. Term of affection, you know. It's only decent of them.
Go on.
They chatter away in their absurd lingo, but bless their hearts, it's a free country. But this putting them up to read English, potooks, and giving them ideas. A few more people like you in England would be a dangerous place to live in. What are you trying to do? Turn them into gentlemen? What's the idea?
I'm beginning to wonder myself.
And there's another thing. This buying them out of the mine is a lot of poppycock. It may interest you, you know, that I own a half share in it.
And that explains a good deal.
Why don't you take up croquet, my dear madam? Keep you out of mischief.
You may stop calling me your dear madam. I'm not married, I'm not French, and you haven't the slightest affection for me.
All right, Rogers.
Just a moment. I know I should be sticking a pin into a whale, but here are two words about yourself. You are the Squire Bountiful, are you? I should like to point out that there is a considerable amount of dirt, ignorance, misery, and discontent abroad in this world, and a good deal of it is due to people like you.
What?
You are a stupid, conceited, addle-headed nincompoop. And you can go to blue blazes. Good afternoon.
Miss Moffat snaps her horse's reins, and the buggy takes off.
Just been drinking.
Later, the two women ride through the countryside.
That was most undignified of me, but I feel better for it.
I am glad, because it was plain spoken, wasn't it? Sometimes I wonder if men really know best, don't you?
Tears well up in Miss Moffat's eyes.
What will you do now?
Have you got a handkerchief?
That is a good idea. I always love a cry when I'm depressed. Such an advantage over the gentleman, I always think.
I want to blow my nose.
As Miss Moffat blows her nose, Miss Ronbury sits stiffly beside her, her eyes shifting uncomfortably. Later, they arrive at Pengarth House.
My lovey, that's finished here now. Flower.
Outside, Mr. Jones supervises the young miners as they raise the school bell onto two posts. The two women climb out of the buggy. Miss Ronbury carries the rolled-up plans. Mr. Jones meets them at the front gate.
Miss Moffat, we have the bell for the school.
Well, it's good to see it anyway.
It was on Llantallan Monastery before it was burned down.
What off, Mr. Jones?
You're not getting my battered. Die on.
The women walk inside. Miss Ronbury takes off her hat as Miss Moffat slowly shuts the door.
I've decided to give up the school, Miss Ronbury.
Oh.
Miss Moffat looks at her desk.
What are these exercise books doing here?
Don't you remember? You assigned the boys an essay on how I spend my holidays.
I must have been mad.
If I has ever holiday, I has breakfast and a talk, then dinner and a rest, tea, then nothing, then supper, then I talks and I go sleep.
From exhaustion, I suppose. Another time I'd have been faintly amused by this one's idea of a holiday, judging by a rather crude drawing.
What is it?
Bicycling tour with me in bloomers. What shall it be this year? Bargaining among the eternal snows or tasting the joys of Father Neptune.
Why, that's beautiful. Extraordinary.
Yes, I might have thought so, too, if I hadn't seen it in that book open on the desk.
Oh.
Oh, no. Your squire was right. I've been a stupid and impractical idiot. I can't imagine how...
Miss Moffat glances at an essay.
Mine is dark.
She picks it up.
If a light come into the mine... The rivers in the mine will run fast with the voice of many women. The walls will fall in and it will be the end of the world.
We put up the bell.
The lanky miner turns to leave, then pauses.
Turn something sharp in the dark. I can touch with my hands the leaves on the trees and underneath where the corn is green.
Go on, read it.
He approaches.
There is a wind in the shaft, not carbon monoxide they talk about. It smells like the sea, only like as if the sea has fresh flowers lying about. And that is my holiday.
Miss Moffat closes the notebook and reads the name on the front. Her gaze fixes on the young man.
Are you Morgan Evans?
Yes, miss.
Did you write this?
No, miss.
But it's in your book.
Yes, miss.
Then who did write it?
I don't know, miss.
She motions for Miss Ronbury to leave. Miss Moffat sets the notebook on her desk and sits up in her chair.
Did you write this?
I don't know, miss. What's the matter with it?
Sit down.
Morgan sits, wiping his nose on his hand.
Spelling take your cap off. Spelling deplorable, of course. Mine with two N's and leaves L-E-F-S.
What was it by rights?
A V to start with.
Never heard of no V's, miss.
Don't call me miss.
Are you not a miss?
Yes, I am, but it's not polite. You say, yes, Miss Moffat, or no, Miss Moffat. M-O-double-F-A-T.
No V's?
No V's. Where do you live?
Under the ground, miss.
No, I mean your home.
In Wien, miss. Moffat. 4 miles from here.
How big is it?
A few houses and a beer house.
Have you any hobbies?
Oh, yes.
What?
Rum.
Rum. Do you live with your parents?
No, by my own self. My mother is dead, and my father and my four brothers was in the big shaft accident when I was 10.
Killed?
Oh, yes, everybody was.
What sort of man was your father?
He had a dash of English.
Oh.
He learned it to me.
Did you go to chapel?
No, thank you.
Who taught you to read and write?
I did.
Why?
I don't know.
What books have you read?
Books. Bits of the Bible and a book that a fella nabbed for me.
What was it?
The Lady's Companion.
Knitting her brow, Miss Moffat looks at the dirty young man with disheveled hair, then shifts her gaze. She stands and slowly walks toward the fireplace, clasping her hands together. Morgan sits restlessly in his chair. He wipes his mouth on his cap, then starts to stand.
Can I go now, please?
No.
He sits.
Do you want to learn any more?
No, thank you.
Why not?
The other men would have a good laugh.
I see. Have you ever written anything before this exercise?
What is the matter with it?
Nothing's the matter with it. Quite the contrary. It shows you're very clever.
Clever? Is that what you have said?
What effect has this news on you?
Well, it is a bit sudden. It makes me that I want to get more clever still. I want to know what is behind all of them books.
Can you come tomorrow?
At night I could come. In the day I'm working on the 6 to 4 shift.
Good. At 7 then. In the meantime, I'll correct this for spelling and grammar.
Yes, Miss Moffat.
That'll be all. Good night.
Good night, Miss Moffat.
She sits at her desk, then eyes Morgan at the door.
Are you the one I spanked?
Yes, Miss. Moffat.
Grinning, Morgan leaves. Miss Moffat picks up his notebook and wanders toward a window. She wears a dark, belted dress with a small watch pin dangling near the lapel. Smiling, she glances outside, then at the essay.
Miss Ronberry.
Miss Moffat turns.
Miss Ronberry.
Yes?
I have been a fool. It doesn't matter about the barn. We're going to start the school right here in this room. I'm going to get those youngsters out of that mine if I have to. Black my face and go down and fetch them myself. We're going on with the school.
She reads Morgan's essay.
And when I walk in the dark, I can touch with my hands where the corn is green.
Miss Moffat looks out the window. Outside, Mr. Jones and the scruffy young miners ring the school bell. Montage, miners walk along a cobblestone street. In a field, a farmer guides a plow drawn by a horse. At Pengarth House, Mr. Jones points to words on a blackboard. Miss Moffat watches the well-groomed Morgan as he and the other students read the words. In a field, peasants harvest tall stalks of wheat. Morgan studies under a tree, wearing a long-sleeved shirt under a tweed vest. Now, a horse-drawn wagon rolls across a snow-covered field. In his room, Morgan studies as snow falls outside. Later, he sits with Miss Moffat at her desk as she corrects his work. In a field, a shepherd herds his flock down a grassy hillside. Now, Morgan and Mr. Jones walk in town. Morgan waves to some miners as they stroll past, but no one stops. Now, at Pengarth House, Miss Ronbury stands in front of a room full of students and blows a pitch pipe.
One, two, three.
Miss Ronbury conducts the class as they sing. About 30 students sit at wooden desks neatly arranged in the front room. Books line the walls, and a map sits on a shelf. Posters of the alphabet written in cursive hang around the classroom. Boys and men sit to the right of Miss Ronbury, holding their songbooks as they sing. A small boy leans against a smiling old man. A walking cane hangs from their desk. Girls and women sit to Miss Ronbury's left. At her desk, Bessie glares at a plump older woman singing beside her. Then Bessie and another girl stick their tongues out at each other. A buxom middle-aged woman wearing a straw hat decorated with a feather smiles radiantly as she sings. Outside, Miss Moffat rides her bicycle over the stone bridge, then dismounts. Wearing white gloves, she pushes the bike through the gate and props it against the low stone wall. She takes a parcel out of the basket on the handlebars. Near the barn, Mrs. Waddy leans over a washboard, scrubbing clothes in a tub.
You are a clinker, ma'am. Always sneaking off to the village on your bike.
My Greek books arrived, Waddy.
Greek? Do you mean to say you can jabber a bit of Greek, ma'am?
You flatter me. I have to do a bit of studying. If I'm to teach Morgan Evans Greek, I must keep at least one day ahead of him and trust to luck.
Back in the classroom.
That was quite better. Full of splendid feeling and nice and precise as well.
Please, Miss Runbury, can we have some more?
Not today. School dismissed.
The students leave. The plump woman greets a young girl, then Miss Ronbury.
Och, in scholar da hith you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
In the doorway, Miss Moffat watches Miss Ronbury and the old man with the cane.
Oh, is there something you would like to know, Mr. Tom?
Where is Shakespeare?
Where? Shakespeare, Mr. Tom, was a very great writer.
Dear me, and me thinking the man was a place.
Miss Moffat smiles, then walks around the house to a smaller classroom where Mr. Jones sits at a desk.
Class dismissed. They have finished their exercises, Miss Moffat.
Good. Tomorrow we'll start working on the fractional equations.
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Good afternoon.
She stops a student.
Gwynnum, I find you have the most enormous difficulty differentiating between the divisor and the dividend. Is it quite clear now?
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Yes, ma'am.
Morgan sits at a desk.
Finished, Evans?
Yes, Miss Moffat.
How many pages?
9.
3 too many. Boil down to 6. I'm starting you on Greek next week. Evans, this essay on Wealth of Nations is yours.
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Say so and underline it. Nothing irritates a teacher so much as this sort of a vagueness. I couldn't work out this sentence.
She hands him his essay.
The 18th century was a cauldron. Vice and elegance boiled to a simmer until the kitchen of society reeked fulminously and the smell percolated to the marble halls above.
Do you know what it means?
Yes, Miss Moffat.
I don't. Clarify, my boy, clarify. Water with 2 T's, that's a bad lapse. 7 out of 10. Not bad, but not good. You must avoid using long words unless you know exactly what they mean.
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Have you your lines on Voltaire?
Yes, Miss Moffat.
It's just 3 o'clock. Go for your walk. Good and brisk. But kill 2 birds and learn the Voltaire by heart. You can even argue a point like that, you'll do. Back in 20 minutes. Take your pen from behind your ear.
Morgan walks into the big classroom where Bessie draws a caricature of Miss Moffat.
Yes, Miss Moffat. Now turn a somersault and bang. Can you smell scent?
Yes.
Nice, isn't it?
I don't know. I never come across scent before. I never did come across scent before.
Bright, aren't you? Don't you ever get tired of lessons?
He puts on his cap and leaves.
Oh, dear, what the matter be? Oh, dear. There we go. Stuck up teacher's pet.
Bessie dances toward Miss Ronbury at her desk.
must not think that, dear. Miss Moffat says he's clever.
Miss Moffat's riding for a fall. All this ordering him about. I've got eyes in my head, even if she hasn't. And he's getting sick of it. I think a lady ought to be dainty. She's no idea.
Mr. Jones.
Yes, Bessie?
I got some scent on my hands. Would you like to smell them?
No, thank you. I can smell them from here.
Bessie sniffs her hands.
It's lovely.
Miss Moffat walks in.
Please, Miss Moffat, can I have the money for my ticket?
What ticket?
For the fair at Tregana tomorrow. You said I could go.
On the contrary, I said you couldn't, not in school hours. Ron, has this bill from Liddell and Scott been paid?
I'm afraid not. It's for Evans's new suit.
I should have to sell a couple more shares, I expect.
Oh, dear.
Tend to it, will you?
Certainly.
Bessie plops down at a desk.
Bessie Watty, what is this dying duck business?
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Don't yes, Miss Moffat, me. Explain yourself.
Mama, misses all these lessons is bad for my inside.
What's the matter with your inside?
Well, it keeps going round and round through sitting down. Perhaps what I want is a change.
Well, there's nothing to prevent you from going for walks between lessons. As a matter of fact, you can go now. Quick march.
Miss Moffat leaves and Bessie shoots her a hard stare.
I'm not going.
Miss Moffat turns.
What did you say?
I'm not going. Everybody's against me. I'm going to throw myself off a cliff and kill myself. It'll make a nice case in the papers. Me at the bottom of a cliff. In pieces. I'm going mad. I'm going mad, I am. Going to kill myself. Nothing going to stop me. Stone dead at the bottom of a cliff.
Bessie's mother throws a cup of water in her face.
Made a mess of your floor, ma'am, but it's worth it. She's got bad blood, this girl. Mark my word.
She'll catch her death.
There's nothing like cold water, ma'am. I learned that with her father. He was foreign, you know.
And how do you feel after that?
I can't remember anything. I'm in a coma.
Miss Moffat leads Bessie toward the staircase.
Shall we go to our room for a little while with the door locked and try to remember?
She nudges her upstairs.
Next week, I'll send you away to work. And we'll see how you like that.
Miss Moffat ushers Bessie into her room and locks the door.
Oh, Ron.
Yes?
Don't forget the squire's coming at 6.
But we haven't seen him since that dreadful day.
I know. I hope I don't behave as stupidly again. It's vital that I make a right impression this time.
Mrs. Watty wears a uniform.
Why, Mrs. Watty?
Guess what's happened to me?
What?
I'm a sergeant major.
Indeed to goodness.
Do you remember Sergeant Major Hopkins deserting in Cardiff and marrying a sailor?
Yes.
Well, last week, not 2 months after she gave up the corpse, she was dead.
And you stepped right into her shoes.
Well, they're a bit on the big side, but I can put a bit of paper in. The uniform fits lovely, though. Ain't it a clinker?
Mrs. Watty?
Coming. Tally-o.
We'll be late for the meeting.
All right, Mrs. Dim. What's the hurry?
The whole corpse is waiting.
The woman bangs a bass drum as they walk off. Now at the pub, Mr. Thomas, the bartender, pours a beer.
Donna Pedworth, pint of tea.
Dispie.
Morgan sits at the bar, swigging back the last of his drink.
Another Glen.
He tosses his glass.
Wrong?
The same.
With a piece of chalk, Morgan writes the words Amo, Amas, Amat on the bar. Thomas gives him another drink.
You can fix me up a bottle to take with me, Glen.
Morgan, be the would you stay?
I said you could fix me up a bottle to take with me.
All right now, you speak in English, Morgan.
What if I do?
Our dear Morgan goes to school, now he does.
Which is none of your business.
What language is this you've written here, Morgan?
It is Latin.
Do the words have a meaning?
They do. I love you, love he loves.
They are words you have learned in the school?
They are.
What use are they, Morgan?
Will they help you swing a pick any faster when you go back to the mine?
I love you, love he loves.
Morgan straightens.
The words are not meant to be funny.
I love, you love, he loves. Ki bach raskol.
Morgan slugs the miner in the face, then falls to the floor. A Brilling man picks Morgan up and shoves him. Another miner grabs him by the coat and kicks him out the door. Morgan lands face down in the street. Thomas rushes to help him up, a bottle of liquor in his hand.
Sorry, my lad. The boys was only having fun.
And there's others that's been having their fun too, Glenn.
Morgan swigs from the bottle and leaves as Mrs. Waddy and her group march to the pub.
Are you going into the Questmore Arms, Sergeant Major?
I'd go anywhere to save sinners.
Mrs. Waddy stalks into the pub. Now at Pengarth House, Miss Ronbury watches a covered carriage pull up outside.
Miss Moffat?
Miss Ronbury hurries past the double windows to the staircase.
Miss Moffat, it's the squire.
Let him in, Ron.
Very well. Come in.
She rushes to the door.
Squire.
Good evening. So this is the seat of learning.
Your hat?
No, thank you. I'm not staying.
Oh.
You can tell from me that I've not come here to be insulted again.
Oh, I'm sure you haven't. I mean...
She called me an addle-headed nincompoop.
Miss Ronbury, dear, my roses are dying. Would you pour out a little water for them? I have such a headache. Squire.
You wrote to me. Perhaps you've forgotten.
Oh, how could I forget? I only thought that after the overwrought fashion of my behavior at our last meeting... You must ignore my very nervous invitation. Miss Ronbury, a chair, dear, for the squire.
I have not a great deal of time to spare, I fear.
Of course you haven't. I was just saying to Miss Ronbury, the squire is so busy he'll never be able to fit it in. Oh, Miss Ronbury, dear, would you put water in these, please?
She gives her the flowers, then sits down.
Tell me, squire, how did your prize-giving fare this afternoon?
Rather a bore, I'm afraid.
I have always wanted to see you judge. I love flowers.
It wasn't flowers. It was cows.
Oh. Well, it was your speech I wanted to hear, of course. I heard you made such an amusing one at the croquet club.
Did they tell you about that? Rather a good pun, eh? May I sit down?
Do.
I thought old Griffiths the butcher was going to laugh his napper off.
Indeed. You know, Squire, that makes me very proud.
Proud? Why?
Because he wouldn't have understood a word you said if his two little girls hadn't learned English at my school.
I never thought of it like that.
And may I offer you some tea?
Oh, no, thanks very much. I can't abide the stuff. I've trained my tummy for better things than tea, thanks very much.
And I'm sorry to be unable to offer you anything stronger, but in this house, we're only women, you know.
Well, I quite understand. Feminine tummy, I've always said, very much like the feminine mind. Both a bit on the weak side.
How right you are, Squire. We're not exactly rugged creatures, are we?
Miss Moffat leans back in her chair, a shawl draped around her shoulders. She rests her face against her hand, then peeks between her fingers at the Squire.
What's the matter? Headache?
Squire, you see before you a tired woman. We live and learn. I have learned how right you were that day. I have worked my fingers to the bone, battering my head against a stone wall.
But I heard you were a spiffing success.
Oh, no.
Well, it's very fair of you to admit it, I must say.
You see, in one's womanly enthusiasm, one forgets that the qualities vital to the success of a venture of this sort are lacking in one. Intelligence, courage, and authority. In short, the qualities of a man.
Oh, come. You mustn't be too hard on yourself. After all, you meant well.
That's kind of you to say, Squire, but I need more than words. I need help. Your help.
What kind of help?
Well, you see, I'm faced with a problem. The question of what to do with the future of Morgan Evans.
Morgan Evans? He used to be one of my miners, I believe. What's his trouble? Poaching?
Oh, no.
Got himself... tangled up with a bit of muslin, something of that sort.
Oh, no, Squire.
Well, what about the little Cockney filly?
Bessie Watty, oh, no, I assure you. She's only a schoolgirl. Oh, no, it's nothing of that sort. But he is a problem just the same. And, like a true woman, I have to scream for help to a man. To you.
Oh, scream away, dear lady. Scream away.
Well... Morgan Evans is clever. He can write.
Can he now?
Oh, he's more than clever. This boy is quite out of the ordinary.
Are you sure?
As sure as one of your miners would be. cutting through coal and striking a diamond without a flaw. This boy was born with exceptional gifts. They should be given every chance.
You mean he might turn into a literary bloke?
He might, yes.
Well, I'm blown. How do you know?
By his work, it's very good.
How do you know it's good?
Well, how does one know Shakespeare's good?
Shakespeare? What's he got to do with it?
Well, he was a literary bloke.
Well, he was, wasn't he?
If Morgan Evans had a protector.
A what?
A protector. We'd had them before in England, you know.
She reads an inscription in a book.
To the Right Honourable the Earl of Southampton, your honours in all duty, William Shakespeare.
Oh.
I often think of the pride that surged in the Earl's bosom when his encouragement gave birth to the masterpiece of a poor and humble writer. This little tenant of yours, Squire, has it in him to bring great credit to you.
By Julius, he is a tenant of mine, isn't he? Well, if this boy really is clever, it seems a pity for me not to do something about him, doesn't it?
It's a great pity, and I can tell you exactly what you can do about it. There's a scholarship going at Oxford.
Oxford?
They have agreed to take this boy on one condition, that you vouch for him.
Oh, come here, lady, you take the cake. Can't he be just as clever at home?
Oh, no, no, he must have polish. He has everything else. The background of a university would be invaluable to him.
Oh, my dear lady.
Will you do it?
Well, I must say, it's asking...
Think of Shakespeare, Squire. William Shakespeare.
Well, if the Earl of Southampton could produce a Shakespeare,
Think of your inscription, Squire, that will be handed down to posterity.
Posterity? Posterity? Oh, serene, dear lady. Oh, serene. I'll drop a line to some of the bigwigs next week. By Jove, this is rather a laugh, huh? Rather like having an entry in the Derby.
Exactly like the Derby, Squire.
Well, I must be off.
Outside.
Oh, Squire, I would be most obliged if the letter could be posted tomorrow. Would you like me to draft out a recommendation and send it over to the hall? You must be so busy with the estate.
Yes, I am, rather. Poker supper tomorrow night. Yes, do that. Well, goodbye, dear lady.
Thank you so very much, Squire.
Oh, happier conditions and all that. Well, I'm glad you've come to your senses.
Thank you again, Squire, from the bottom of a grateful heart.
Not at all. I'm all for giving a writer fellow help in hand. Well, goodbye again, dear lady.
Goodbye again, Squire.
All right, Hammond, get up.
Miss Moffat smiles as the Squire rides away in his carriage. She takes off her shawl and marches back to the house.
That man is so stupid. It sits on him like a halo. Thank you for your shawl, Ron. Better watch out. I'll beat you to the altar yet.
What happened?
We have met the Squire, and he is ours. In 10 minutes, I have given the Squire the impression that he spends his whole time fostering genius in the illiterate.
How?
By soft soap and curtsying. Ron, I am entering Morgan Evans for a scholarship to Oxford University, and the Squire is going to vouch for him. Hallelujah.
But they don't have minors at Oxford University.
Well, they're going to.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Miss Moffat begins writing. Miss Ronbury walks to the front door.
Oh, it's you, Morgan. Miss Moffat is in the study. I'll tell her that you are back.
I don't want to see no Miss Moffat.
You mean I don't want to see Miss Moffat? The double negative, you know.
Now, don't you start. I like the double negative. It says what I want the way I like, and I'm not going to stand no interferences from nobody.
Morgan, I've never seen you like this before.
No, you haven't, have you?
Miss Moffat walks in.
Oh, you're back, Evans. Have a good walk.
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Sit down. I have a surprise for you.
I will stand, Miss Moffat.
If you like. Good night, Ron.
Good night.
I'm putting you in for a scholarship at Oxford.
Oxford? Where the Lords go?
The same. Oh, by the way, about your Greek. I've made you a simplified alphabet to begin with. It's jolly interesting after Latin. Have a look at it by Tuesday so we can make a good start. Oh, before we go on with the lesson, I found you a nail file. I'll show you how to use it.
I shall not need a nail file in the coal mine.
In the what?
I am going back to the coal mine.
I don't understand you. Explain yourself.
I don't want to learn Greek, not to pronounce any long English words, not to keep my hands clean.
What is the matter with you? Why not?
Because I was born in a Welsh hayfield when my mother was helping with the harvest. And I always lived in a house with no stairs, only a ladder and no water. And until my brothers was killed, I never sleep except three in a bed. I know that is terrible grammar, but it's true.
What has three in a bed got to do with learning Greek?
It has a lot. The last 2 years, I have not had no proper talk with English chaps in the mine because I was so busy keeping this old grammar in this place, trying to better myself the day and the night. You cannot take a nail file into the Questmore Arms public bar.
But my dear boy, file your nails at home. Besides, you don't go to the Questmore Arms.
Oh, yes, I do. I've been there every afternoon for a week, spending your pocket money. And I've been there now, and that is why I can speak my mind.
I had no idea you felt like this.
Because you're not interested in me, that's why.
Her eyes stare searchingly.
Not interested in me?
How can you be interested in a machine that you put a penny in, and if nothing comes out, you give it a good shake? Evans, write me an essay. Evans, get up and bow. Evans, what is a subjunctive? My name is Morgan Evans, and all my friends call me Morgan. And if there's anything that gets on the wrong side of me, it's calling me Evans. And do you know what they call me in the village? Key Barker Skull, the schoolmistress little dog. What has it got to do with you if my nails are dirty? Mind your own business!
Morgan sinks onto a bench and buries his head in his hand. His chest heaving, he grimaces. Miss Moffat stares at him, then slowly walks behind him. With her hands resting on the back of the bench, she keeps her eyes focused on the floor.
I had never meant you to know this. I have spent money on you. I don't mind that. Money ought to be spent. But time is different. Your life is just beginning. Mine is half over. 2 years is valuable currency. I have spent 2 years on you. Ever since that first day, mainspring of the school has been your career. Sometimes in the middle of the night, when I have been desperately tired, I have lain awake making plans, large and small, sensible and silly, plans for you. And you say I have no interest in you.
His eyes shift under his furrowed brow.
If I say any more, I shall start to cry. I haven't cried since I was younger than you are. And I'd never forgive you for that. I don't like this sort of conversation. Please never mention it again. If you want to go on, be at school tomorrow. If not, don't.
She strides toward the study.
I don't want your money and I don't want your time. I don't want to be thankful to no strange woman for anything.
I don't understand you. I don't understand you at all.
Morgan stands motionless as Miss Moffat turns and heads into the study. She shuts the door behind her. Morgan looks away from the closed door and bites his lip. Taking a deep breath, he wipes his nose and pulls his cap out of his pocket. With a defiant gaze, he tugs on his cap and storms outside. He takes a long drink from his bottle of liquor. Above him, Bessie climbs out of an upstairs window.
Morgan.
He glances up.
Come help me down.
Bessie slides down a slanted roof, drops a short way, and lands on her knees. She smiles at Morgan.
Hello.
She stands.
I hurt my knee, sliding down the roof. Ooh.
He walks away.
So I'm invisible.
She flips her hair and follows.
Going for a walk?
I am.
Do you mind if I come along with you?
Free country.
Bessie steps over a stone wall and skips after him. Morgan keeps a steady pace, focusing ahead.
Don't walk so fast, Morgan. You'll have me all out of breath. Talking a lot, aren't I?
Yes.
Well, so were you in there, and I'm not deaf.
Spying, were you?
Well, if people lock me up in rooms and take the key out of the keyhole, they can't blame me for listening at it. Oh, she's wicked.
Mind your own business.
Bessie follows Morgan up a path toward a weeping willow tree. Long, drooping branches sway above their heads. In a white dress, Bessie leans against the thick trunk, but Morgan walks past her. She follows him, and he stops. His finger is toying with a willow branch.
Oh,
Listen to the night, Morgan. Isn't it beautiful?
Morgan sits with his back to her.
You like that singing, don't you?
He lifts his solemn face.
You know, it's funny, but we've never been by ourselves before.
Da kung aria di la rana verhan, tu ram di ro ram di radlila. O da baudi anna bahi, tu ram di ro ram di radlila.
Didn't know I knew Welsh before, did you? You like that song, don't you? That's why I learned it.
She leans close and he looks away.
You are different when you sing.
Am I?
Her lips hover inches from his. Morgan eyes her, then gets up. She grabs his bottle of liquor.
What's this? Medicine?
She swigs it.
Tastes like rubber. It's nice, though.
He snatches it away.
No. You was quite right putting her in her place like that. Clever chap like you, learning lessons off a woman. You don't have to go to Oxford. A clever chap like you.
That's right.
What a man wants is a bit of sympathy.
He sweeps her into his arms and kisses her hungrily. Now in the classroom.
A pronoun is a word used instead of a noun.
That is correct.
Miss Moffat points to the blackboard.
Now, notice this sentence. James took James's hat and put James's hat on James's desk. Is it correct?
No, no.
Write the sentence on your slates as you think it should be written.
The pupils get their slates and begin to write. A dark-haired boy frowns and stares at the blackboard. Miss Moffat's tired eyes rest on him.
Willem, you seem to be having difficulty. Can you make a try?
He stands.
If I take my hat and put it on my desk. What is wrong with that?
Gwilym, we're not talking about your hat. We're talking about the sentence, the structure, the use of pronouns.
I do not understand.
Idwar, you may read yours.
Idwar stands.
James took his hat and put it on his desk.
Exactly. Gwilym, do you understand now?
No, Miss Moffat.
Very well, we'll try again tomorrow. Class dismissed.
Miss Moffat shuts her books and erases the blackboard. Mr. Jones approaches.
I'm afraid William Hughes has no head for grammar. It was different with Morgan Evans.
It's not always the hair that wins the race, Mr. Jones.
Indeed not, Miss Moffat. But I have seen you struggling with William Hughes and the others.
It was not my intention to start a school for only those with natural gifts. We must help all who want to be helped. The old and the young, the slow and the fast. Oh, Mr. Jones.
Yes, Miss Moffat.
Mrs. Simon Thomas has received a letter from America. Would you go by and read it for her?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Now the miners walk through town. Morgan whistles, his face dark with soot. As two young miners slap arms around him, Morgan breaks into a smile. He leaves the group with a wave and walks into a house. Later in his room.
Morgan?
Come in.
Mr. Jones walks in, a smile on his round face.
Good evening.
Morgan bathes in a tub.
What do you want?
No, my boy. I mean no offense. Has the time come in Glansarno when a man can't pay a friendly call?
Miss Moffat sent you.
No, Miss Moffat didn't send me. You see, old Mrs. Simon Thomas just down the lane had a letter from America. And since she cannot read, I have been there to read it for her.
What has that got to do with me?
Well, you could have read it yourself and saved me a trip. True, you have been away from the school for some time now.
That is my concern.
Yes, but still it is a fine thing to be able to read. Books, for instance.
He looks at an open book.
Norwood's History of Kings. How do you find it, Morgan?
That is my business.
Morgan, you must come back to the school. Miss Moffat...
Why must I?
Because the Almighty God has given you a brain, and you must make the most of it.
I am all right the way I am.
Yes, but you are not happy, boy. Anyone can see that.
I don't need Miss Moffat. I don't need to read notebooks. I can hold my own head up. Now get out!
Pinching his brow, Mr. Jones puts on his hat and turns to leave. He opens the door and steps through, then looks back at Morgan. Mr. Jones levels a finger at him.
But remember this, Morgan. A full ear of corn will bend its head, but an empty one stands upright.
Morgan blinks, his eyes thoughtful. Now, in the classroom, an old woman reads.
A king's duty is to govern his people well. He must see that only good laws is made, and he must also take care that the people obeys them.
Morgan bursts in, catching everyone's attention. He looks at Mr. Jones, who nods toward the study and flashes a satisfied smile.
Continue, Mr. Tom.
And the bishop's duty is to pray and preach, and to see that all the clergymen...
Morgan enters the study and shuts the door behind him. Seated at the desk, Miss Moffat works intently. She heaves a sigh and looks up. Staring at him, she rises from her seat. He squeezes his hat in his hands.
I would like to learn Greek. I would like to try for Oxford.
Miss Moffat blinks and her gaze wavers. She glances down at her desk, then turns and pulls a slim volume off the windowsill. Approaching Morgan, she flips through the book.
This message was instituted by the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. This station is participating in a required monthly test of the Illinois Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
Pempi, Pempleman, Pempity, Pempusy.
Now in a field, a farmer crops stalks of wheat with a large scythe. In his room, Morgan studies in bed. Later, rain falls outside as Morgan sips from a teacup and pours over a pile of books. He wears a suit and a bow tie.
N-A-N-O-3.
He flips to the back of the book. He glances up. Outside, Morgan's classmates walk through the rain.
Galileo, 1564, 1642.
Morgan's classmates assemble below his window. Morgan smiles and waves down to them.
It's time to come out. We have come to take you to the examination.
Ron, do you hold me on a minute?
No, Morgan, no. Now you must always speak in English.
In English!
In English, Morgan.
Behave like you will when you have won the examination.
When you are real tough at Oxford.
Speech, Morgan.
All right, then. Like it might be at Oxford. May I say first, I am delighted you have come for me. I shan't be more than a moment.
Morgan grins broadly and shuts the windows. He shrugs on his coat and dons his southwester rain hat, then starts for the door. Whipping around, Morgan grabs a book and scans it. With eyes shut, he mumbles to himself, then dashes out the door. Morgan joins them.
Oh,
Oh, remember, even if I am lucky enough to pass the examination today, I will still be a long way from Oxford. It will only give me the right to stand up for the talking examination with the professors.
You will win the examination today.
And when the time comes, you'll win the talking.
Morgan looks warmly at his classmates.
They're all my good friends, Robert. And if I am lucky enough to win the examination and then the scholarship, I know I shall learn nothing of friendship at Oxford. Well, come along. Standing here will not get us there on time.
Their bouncy steps carry them through the rain together. The students rest their arms on each other's shoulders or swing them with their purposeful gait. They follow a path up a hill and disappear around a bend. Now at Pengarth House, Mrs. Waddy dusts.
I am saved, I am.
Miss Ronbury brings in a chair.
Saved, I am. I am S-I-V-E-D. What might the armchair be for, miss?
The squire's coming. He's invigilating.
What was that, please, miss?
The Oxford people have appointed him and Miss Moffat to watch Morgan Evans while he's sitting the scholarship.
Why?
So that he cannot cheat.
What a shame.
What time is it?
It's nearly 9 o'clock, miss.
How terrible if Morgan couldn't get through.
Counting sheep all night I was. She didn't get a wink neither. I could hear her thinking.
This is a very important day for her, Watty.
The postier, miss. Looks like this one's from Bessie. Would you mind, miss?
To think I taught her to write.
She opens the letter.
Dear Mum, I don't like being in service at all. Cheltenham is terrible. I do the steps. Madam is terrible. Can I have a shilling? Your obedient girl.
Obedient? I like that. She's been away 3 months now. She ought to be getting used to it.
Do you not miss her?
No. I don't like her, you know. Never have.
Why, Mrs. Watty, your own daughter?
I know, but I've never been able to take to her. First time I saw her, I said no.
Mrs. Watty rips up the letter and walks into the kitchen. By the stairs, Miss Moffat checks her watch pin against a grandfather clock.
Do you think he will get through the rain all right?
He'd get through anything this morning.
I am so glad. Wouldn't it be splendid if he won?
It's not very likely, I'm afraid. We'll have some pretty strong public school candidates against him.
But wouldn't it be exciting?
Yes, it would. More than that, it would be a wonderful thing for rural education all over the country.
Most of all, it would be a wonderful thing for you.
I suppose so. It's odd to have spent so many hours with another human being in the closest intellectual communion. And it has been that. I know every trick and twist of that brain of his. Exactly where it will falter and where it will gallop ahead of me. And yet not to know him at all. I woke up in the middle of the night thinking of Henry VIII. I have a feeling he'll ask a question about the old boy in the papacy.
She looks at her books.
I'll cram one or two facts into him at the last minute. Oh, dear God, he must win. He must.
She takes a breath and sits down at a desk. Mrs. Waddy walks over, offering a cup.
A cup of tea, ma'am.
Miss Moffat hurriedly copies from a book.
Now, ma'am, don't get all in a bucket. 6 more Saturday mornings like this in the next half year, remember?
Suppose the squire doesn't come.
He will. He's gotten to the point of looking on the boy as a racehorse.
There's the squire now.
Miss Ronbury rushes to the door and opens it.
Your mother.
I left the same day I posted it.
This is unexpected.
Isn't it just? I've been travelling all night. I woke Mr. Jones up and he got the station master to drive us over in the trap in the rain. Nice, wasn't it?
You've arrived at a most inconvenient time.
Fancy.
Have you come to see your mother?
No.
And why are you here?
Questions and answers. Just like school again.
Mr. Jones, why have you brought that girl here this morning?
I did not bring her, Miss Moffat. She brought me.
Whom have you come to see?
You.
I can give you exactly 1 minute of my time.
Bessie sits down.
Is it money? Would you mind waiting in the study?
Mr. Jones and Miss Ronbury leave.
Quickly. 1 minute.
Why?
Morgan Evans is sitting here for his Oxford examination this morning.
Well, he needn't.
What do you mean?
Because he won't ever be going to Oxford.
Why not?
Because there's going to be a little stranger. I'm going to have a little stranger.
You're lying.
Dr. Brett, living in Cheltenham. And if you don't believe it's Morgan Evans, you ask him about that night you locked me up. The night you had the words with him.
Miss Moffat blinks and looks off.
I see.
Her brow creased. She paces away from Bessie.
Does he know?
I come to tell him. I was ever so upset, of course. Now I've lost my place, I shall have to have some help in taking care of the little stranger.
Oh, stop saying little stranger. You must have a baby, call it a baby. Have you told anybody?
Mr. Jones, that's all.
Morgan Evans must not be disturbed for 3 hours. You are not going to see him.
You can't bully me. Hasn't sank in yet, has it? I'm teaching you something, am I? You couldn't see what was going on under your nose because you're so busy managing everything. Well, you can't manage him any longer because he's got to manage me now.
I'm afraid I'm going to do a little managing right now. You are going into the kitchen where your mother will prepare your breakfast. You will then lie down. After this session is over, we will go upstairs and talk it all over when we are a little calm.
He's here.
I've got to see him. If you try and disobey me, I shall not answer for the consequences.
Bessie shrugs Miss Moffat's hand off her shoulder.
You wouldn't dare lay a finger on me.
Oh, yes, I would. If you stay in this room, or if you blab to anybody about this before we've had that little talk, even your mother, I'm in a pretty nervous state myself this morning, and I shall strike you so hard that I shall probably kill you. I mean every word I say.
Miss Moffat opens the kitchen door. With a smug smile, Bessie strolls past, her chin raised.
I don't mind. 3 hours will go by soon enough.
Averting her eyes, Miss Moffat shuts Bessie in the kitchen. She perks her head, then strides calmly toward the door and opens it. The squire steps inside.
Good morning.
Sorry. Such a dreadful day. How kind of you.
Not at all.
Ron, the squire's here.
Anything for a lark. I'm glad it isn't me, what?
Squire?
Oh, thank you.
Miss Ronbury takes his coat.
Yes, I am rather wet.
He brushes off his suit.
I've got a spiffing bit of news for you. I bought the barn from Sir Herbert, and we can move the whole school next door by the end of the year. What do you think of that?
Wonderful.
Oh, aren't you pleased about it?
Yes, but it's examination rather worrying.
Squire, your chair.
Oh, thank you.
Miss Ronbury opens the door to Morgan, who steps in out of the rain.
Good day, everyone.
Good morning.
Morgan, let me take your things.
Thank you.
Beastly weather, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
The squire watches Morgan eagerly.
You haven't caught cold, have you?
No, Miss Mama.
Before I open the papers, I have a feeling they may bring up Henry VIII. Would you memorize these facts?
Thank you.
He takes the sheet of paper.
Fight Heather. Just a thought.
Thank you.
Well, good luck, my boy.
Thank you, sir.
I'm glad it isn't me.
Vorklüdianter, Machkenny.
Diolk.
Miss Moffat looks at her watch pin.
1 minute more, Evans. You'd better sit down.
He gives back the paper, and she gestures to a desk. Morgan sits behind it.
Name it particulars to save time. And don't get exuberant.
No.
Or illegible.
No.
Aren't you going to wish my little protege good fortune?
She soberly meets the squire's wide-eyed gaze, then blinks in thought and looks at Morgan.
Good luck.
He gives a modest nod.
Thank you.
Miss Moffat's gaze lingers on him. Then she returns to her desk and pulls a large envelope from a drawer. Miss Ronbury watches Miss Moffat carefully cut open the large envelope. The squire peeks at his watch, and Morgan twirls a sprig of white heather between his fingers. Miss Moffat looks at the exam, then turns to him.
Ready?
Morgan nods. As Miss Moffat hands him his exam, they look steadily at each other. Morgan examines the papers, his lips moving slightly as he reads. He absently chews the end of his pen. Miss Moffat peruses a copy of the exam, her brow furrowed. Her cheeks lift with a smile.
Henry VIII.
She raises her proud chin and Morgan smiles. Dipping his pen in an inkwell, he bends over the exam and writes. Now, Mr. Jones rings the school bell as pupils hurry to class. In the morning sun, children in winter woolens scurry past Miss Moffat into the schoolyard. A dusting of snow covers the ground and buildings. A carriage stops in front of the gate, and the squire steps down.
Greetings, learned lady.
Good morning, squire.
You know, I'm beginning to feel like a silly old headmaster, watching these eager little beggars soaking up education like a lot of blinking little blotters. There's quite a thrill to it once you get the proper viewpoint. You don't think my being there disturbs them? Makes them self-conscious, nothing of that sort.
Oh, of course not. We like having you.
Oh, it's very nice of you, Mrs. Pedagog. Extremely so. Any news yet from young Evans?
I expect we'll hear in a day or two.
I must admit I've got that young man on my mind these days. Well, I must be toddling on. Goodbye, dear lady, goodbye.
You mustn't be late for class, you know.
The squire strolls up a hill toward the school building. Around him, boys hurl snowballs at each other. In the study, Miss Ronbury flips through a book as Miss Moffat searches the desk.
I wonder where my checkbook is.
You were using it only yesterday. Right where you are.
Oh, yes, of course, here it is.
More bills for the school. Oh, I wish you could be more careful in your expenditures.
Nonsense. Moderation is a vastly overrated virtue. Oh, Ron, your next class is waiting for you.
Do you know what has happened to Bessie Watty?
Why do you ask that?
Well, there's been a great deal of curiosity. Gossip, really.
She was sent back to service in Cheltenham. Anything odd about that?
No, I suppose not. Only people have been asking questions.
With a wavering look, Miss Ronbury turns and walks out. Miss Moffat watches her go, then strokes her chin. Her brow furrowed, she glances at the door. Grabbing a pen, Miss Moffat pauses, then starts to write a letter. Dear Bessie, enclosed find the usual check. Morgan Evans is still drinking heavily. In the schoolyard, children play and throw snowballs. Miss Ronbury vigorously rings a hand-sized bell back and forth. The pupils file into the school. Later, in class, Mr. Jones points to words on a blackboard.
Elizabeth?
Elizabeth?
Known as Good Queen Bess. Now, do you all understand that?
Yes, Mr. Jones.
An older man studies his slate.
Mr. Jones?
Yes?
In that word there, known, what in goodness is a K doing there?
Well, it is there because that is the proper way to spell.
It is not the way you say it. Known is the way it sounds. You do not say canone. Is that not right, Squire?
Well, I must admit you got a point there. N-O-W-N, K-N-O-W-N. Your viewpoint's completely logical. No one can deny that.
Please, sir, how many L's in daffodils?
Daffodils? Oh. Usual number, I suppose.
One L or two, sir.
Look here, my good man. If you don't know the meaning or the proper spelling of a word, you should look it up in the dictionary. You're the one who's supposed to be getting the education, not I. I went through all that myself ages ago. There's no reason for me to delve into all those matters over again. Huh?
And now, pupils, I have a surprise for you.
Morgan Evans.
Yes, our Morgan is returning from Oxford University. And if you will all behave yourselves, you can stay in here to welcome him this afternoon. In the meantime, the class must go on.
Later, Willem, Edouard, and other pupils stand at the window. The squire peeks out, too. Mr. Jones shoos the boys to their seats.
Now, now, boys, sit down, or I will not allow you to wait for Morgan. Any sign of him yet?
No, no, there's no sign of young Evans, only old Sarah.
Well, he is not expected before the train leaving Oxford in the morning.
Just the same, I sent the wagonette down to the station on the off chance.
Shh. If you would please sit down, sir. The pupils are having enough difficulty concentrating now.
Excuse me. I simply can't do a thing with my class. No concentration at all.
Do you think that Morgan may know the result when he arrives?
I doubt it. Miss Moffat said we ought to get a letter in a day or two. I think I'll propel the old pins down the road, just in case.
Please, squire.
What is it, Papa?
What sort of place is Oxford?
I don't know, I'm sure. Cambridge, for so. Oh, thank you, John.
And now, pupils, we will continue with our history class from this morning.
There are a few. What are you all dressed up for?
Because for Morgan Evans.
Is there any news?
Oh, Morgan, oh, quickly.
Morgan, shh.
Any news?
Not yet, Mr. Jones.
Oh.
But when it comes, I know it is good news. So what do? I open the dresser, out the lavender bags, and into my sundaes.
Before we have definite news, that is unwise.
John, go on with Jones, please, sir. You are an old soft. Everybody ready to meet him down by the railroad station.
The grocer got his fiddle.
And William Williams, the public, got his coronet. And me with my mouth organ.
Shh.
Perhaps preparing for news to be good means that it will be.
Everything is preordained. Morgan Evans has either won the scholarship or lost it.
Oh, let us all say together, Morgan Evans has won the scholarship.
Morgan Evans has won the scholarship.
This waiting is getting to be a definite strain. If we're going to welcome a man, well, great Scott, let's go and welcome him.
Squire, wait, let's come with you.
Pupils run outside after the squire.
Miss
Rombury runs out. Mr. Jones shuts the door, halting several pupils.
Class must go on, please.
Later, Miss Rombury joins Miss Moffat in the front room.
Simply no use. They're all scurrying down the road to meet Morgan. You're the only one who doesn't seem to be nervous.
I'm past being nervous, Ron. If he has won, I shan't believe it flatly.
And if he has lost?
Miss Moffat swallows a sip of tea.
If he has lost, we must proceed as if nothing had happened.
Won't you come and help me keep some semblance of order?
Very well, Ron. I shall be up presently.
Miss Rombury wraps her shawl tight around her and heads outside. Miss Moffat's gaze wanders from a stack of papers on her lap. With a sigh, she sets them down, then stands by the flickering fireplace. Later, in class, she points to words on a blackboard.
Love alone is what is keeping all through the night.
Miss Rombury, how greatly their English has improved. Very well. Now shall we try and sing the words with the music?
Yes, Miss Rombury.
You'd better follow me on the blackboard for the first time.
Dozen pupils sit at desks arranged in rows, with mostly girls on one side of the room and boys on the other. Several elderly pupils sing from the back. Mr. Jones, teaching in the adjacent room, smiles warmly at Miss Rombury and the class. Little girls with pigtails sit side by side wearing smocked dresses. One plump-cheeked girl looks around, her pointer finger resting in her mouth.
Now, Miss Rombury, I suggest that they sing it from memory.
We'll try.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Miss Rombury.
Are you ready?
Yes, Miss Rombury.
Outside, Miss Moffat walks away from the school, her smooth strides carrying her across the snow-covered ground. Two spindly trees stand near the road, and beyond, hilly fields roll into distant mountains. Miss Moffat pauses by a well and listens. As she steps slowly toward the stone house, her long black skirt sways at her ankles. Her curled hair, pulled back in a bun, brushes against the high collar of her thick black coat. Now at the train station, the squire and some schoolboys wait under a sign, Glensarno.
Mr. Hughes, are you sure that Morgan Evans didn't come in on the last train?
No, I'm sorry, he didn't.
Is there not another train from London?
No, Edouard. Not until tomorrow.
Squire?
Hmm?
How do you get from Oxford to Wales?
I don't. I know nothing about Oxford. Oh, no train till tomorrow. I'm off. Good night, boys.
Good night. At Pengarth House, Miss Moffat sets a glowing oil lamp on a table. Outside, under a starry sky, a figure walks up the dark road. Inside, Miss Moffat crosses the room and lights another lamp. She turns toward the door as Morgan enters. A smile spreads across his face as he gazes at his teacher.
You would be the first I would talk with, I said, when I came back from Oxford.
Morgan.
She brightens.
I caught the early train. I knew they'd all be watching for me. So I got out at the last stop before Glensarno. Got a lift from there.
Does that mean?
Oh, no news. Except that I am not hopeful.
Why not?
They talked to me for 1 hour at the Viva.
Doesn't mean anything. Go on.
And they jumped on hard in the New Testament question, just as you said they would. Are you very pale?
Better than a raging fever. Sit down.
I spent 5 minutes explaining why St. Paul sailed from a town 300 miles inland.
Oh, dear. Parnell.
Parnell? Oh, yes. I was going to stick up for the old chap. But when they started off with their fellow Parnell, I told the tale against him for half an hour. I wasn't born a Welshman for nothing.
And the French?
Oh, not good. I said naturalement to everything, but it didn't fit every time.
Did the dean send for you?
I had half an hour with him.
Did you?
Oh, yes, but so did the other 9 candidates. He was a very kind and grand old gentleman, sitting in a drawing room the size of town hall. I talked about religion, the same as you said.
Just as you advised.
He asked me if I'd ever had strong drink, and I looked him straight in the eye and said, no.
Oh. When should we know?
The day after tomorrow. They are writing to you.
The villagers are all in their best talking about a holiday. It's very stupid of them, because if you failed, it will make you all the more sick at heart.
If I have failed? Don't speak about it.
But we must speak about it, Morgan. You faced that fact the day you left for Oxford.
I know, but I've been to Oxford and come back since then. I have come back from the world. Since the day I was born, I've been a prisoner behind a stone wall. And now somebody has given me a leg up to have a look at the other side. They cannot drag me back again. They cannot. They must give me a push and send me over.
I've never heard you talk so much since I've known you.
But that's just it. I can talk now. The 3 days I have been there, I've been talking my head off.
If 3 days at Oxford will do this to you, think what you'd be like at the end of 3 years.
Well, that's just it again. It would be everything I need, everything. I spent 3 hours one night discussing the law with one of the other candidates. The most brilliant one of the lot he was. The words came pouring out of me. All the words I'd learnt and written down and never had spoken. I suppose I was talking nonsense, but I was at least holding a conversation. I suddenly realized that I'd never done it before. I'd never been able to do it. Before, it had always been like this. How are you, Morgan? Nice day, Mr. Jones. Not bad for the harvest. A vocabulary of 20 words. There I was with this other candidate, the brilliant one. And all the words you taught me just came pouring out like I'd always known them. I came out of his rooms that night and walked down the high. That's their high street, you know.
Yes, yes.
Everybody seemed to be walking very fast with their gowns on in the moonlight. The bells were ringing, and I was walking faster than anybody, and I felt, well, the same as on the rum in the old days.
Go on.
All of a sudden, with one big rush against that moon and against that high street, I saw this room. You and me sitting here studying. And all those books and everything I'd learned from those books and from you was lighted up like a magic lantern. Ancient Rome, Greece, Shakespeare, Carlyle, Milton, everything had a meaning because I was in a new world, my world. And so it came to me. Why you had worked like a slave to make me ready for this scholarship.
He shyly looks down.
I finished.
I didn't want you to stop.
I had not been drinking.
I know.
He nods thoughtfully.
I can talk to you now.
Yes, I'm glad.
She beams fondly at him, and he shifts his gaze. Fidgeting with his hands, Morgan rises and takes a few steps away. She moves toward him, and the squire walks in, his head down.
Well, sorry, another boy on that train.
I never seen such a crowd in my life. The whole village was down at the station.
Squire.
Yeah? Great Scott! There you are, Edmund.
Good day, sir.
Any news, my boy?
They're sending the result through the post.
Oh, the devil they are. You know, this waiting is becoming a definite strain.
Squire, sit down.
Oh, thank you, my dear.
He sits down in an armchair.
Morgan!
Oh, how are you, Mr. Jones?
Well,
the day after tomorrow.
Oh.
Miss Ronbury.
Why, it's Morgan. Well?
The day after tomorrow.
Oh. How are you, Morgan, dear?
Very well, thank you.
This suspense is killing me.
Mr. Jones, would you light the lamp for me, please?
He lights one by the window.
Even the little children are worried about the results of the examination. They couldn't wait until school was dismissed. Little Lidwell was the first.
Mr. Jones notices a carriage stopping out front. Bessie Waddy, dressed in fine clothes, hands the driver a coin.
Keep the change.
Morgan, my boy, are you not exhausted after your journey? Would you not like something to eat?
Well,
Oh, but of course, how stupid of me. You must be very hungry. Come along, Waddy will fix you some.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Miss Moffat leads Morgan into the kitchen. Mr. Jones quickly shuts the door behind them.
You seem very anxious to get him out of the room.
The most terrible thing.
He opens the door and Bessie saunters in. Wearing a feather-trimmed hat, she flashes an impish grin.
How to do, everybody? Still the same old place, ain't it? Well, look who's here. Hello, Squire.
How do you do?
How do you like this class, ain't it? How are you, Blooming?
Yes, thank you. What is this?
Hello, Miss Ronbury.
Bessie.
How's geography? The world's still going around in circles.
And to what do we owe this honor?
Well, you see, it's like this. Yesterday, after I'd received my usual check, I was lucky enough to be glancing through the Mid-Wales Gazette. And now I've come here to congratulate a certain young gent, just in case he has won that scholarship.
What has that got to do with you?
Well, you see, miss, it's like this. For...
Don't say it. Don't say it.
Her grin broadens.
4 weeks ago yesterday, I had a baby.
Oh. You had a what?
A baby. A little stranger. £7.13. Oh.
Good heavens, how ghastly.
The squire paces away and Mrs. Waddy walks in.
That luggage. Oh, any news, sir?
He points to her daughter.
Bessie! My, you do look a dolly mop. Oh, excuse me, sir.
Say anything you like.
Where'd you get them bracelets?
Present?
Oh, that's all right. Now, what have you been up to?
Turning you into a granny.
Bessie, that... Oh, you could knock me down with a...
What have you tended to Morgan's luggage?
She sees Bessie.
Hello. I've just been telling him. You know what?
Well, now I think it's high time you told us who the fellow is.
That's right, dear. Who is it?
Well, as a matter of fact...
No.
Bessie smiles wryly at Miss Moffat, who marches over.
I'll pay you anything. Anything.
Bessie wiggles her shoulders.
It's no good, miss.
Miss Moffat straightens. Her hard stare flickers.
Morgan Evans.
What?
Oh, ma'am. I've been dreading this for months. In a terrible way, it's a relief.
Bamboozling me every week that he was in the gut.
I can't go on listening. I can't bear it. This horrible, unnatural happening.
All I know is I've got a baby kicking healthy and hungry, and I haven't got a husband to keep it. So his father's got to turn into my husband. It's only fair, ain't it?
I'm afraid, Miss Moffat, I'm inclined to agree.
I'll call him.
There is no need to call him.
Why not?
I am sorry to say that I have a strong feeling of affection for this young woman, and I am willing to do the honorable thing by rehabilitating her in wedlock and bestowing on the infant every advantage by bringing it up a proper Christian.
Are you serious?
I am always serious.
You'd love that, wouldn't you?
Miss Moffat sits wearily at a desk.
Now, we're not pretending it's a windfall, but for a girl who's took the wrong turning, it's a present. And you'd have your own way in everything, wouldn't she, sir?
Of course.
Well, now, will you?
No. I'd like to oblige, really, but I can't. Besides, my elf would be furious.
Your elf?
Oh, ever such a nice gentleman. Sporting, quite a swell. And a race course.
Oh.
He needn't look like that. I only met him 10 weeks ago.
I never heard such a conversation outside a police station. I shall seek the purity of the outside air.
I don't suppose you'd care to make an offer, Squire.
What? Gross impertinence.
The Squire does a double take and storms out.
Doesn't this man of yours want to marry you?
Oh, he won't talk of anything else. But he won't have the baby. He said, of course, if the father had been a pal of his, it might be different. Now, you can understand that, really, can't you? I suppose Mr. Jones wouldn't consider the baby without me.
The baby? Without you? Your child? Why, what about your mother, love?
I expect you'll think I'm a very wicked girl. But you know, I haven't got any.
You're inhuman. That's what you are. To think that you don't even want it.
Miss Moffat looked shrewdly at Bessie.
You want to make him marry you on the chance that he'll become fond enough of the child to ensure its future. Your conscience will be clear, and later you can go off on your own.
I shouldn't be surprised.
In the meantime, it is worthwhile to ruin the future of a boy.
I know nothing about that, I am sure.
Oh, there must be some way out.
Bless us, ma'am, I got it.
What?
Why can't you adopt it?
Miss Moffat furrows her brow.
Don't be ridiculous.
Would that do you, Bessie?
Well, I never...
Well, would it, though?
Yes, it would.
But what do I know about babies? I don't even know what they look like.
Oh, they're lovely little things. Now it's all arranged.
Oh, what? It'll be fantastic.
Oh, do please. Don't you see? It'll put everything to rights. I'd know the baby was safe. Morgan Evans need never know anything about it. And I can marry my friend and it'll all be very beautiful.
Oh, it's mad, I tell you.
Besides, he might even grow up to be quite nice. And turn out like his father.
Now, ma'am. You've been pushing us around for 3 years. It's our turn to give you a shove.
But, Watty, you're the grandmother, surely you...
Oh, no, I couldn't. I don't bear it now, ill will. But every penny I get goes to the corpse. No, dear, you're the one, really, you are.
Miss Moffat's uncertain gaze wavers beneath her pinched brow. She takes a few solemn steps, then turns.
Bessie Watty, do you mean to say that if I should adopt this child, Morgan Evans need never know? You swear.
I swear.
Bessie raises her right hand.
Very well, then. I give in.
Oh, that's lovely. My friend will be pleased. We'll arrange the details later, shall we? My friend gave me this buckle.
Nice, ain't it? He offered me a tiny one. Real. But I think the false is prettier. Don't you?
Are you going to take up a life of disrepute?
I shouldn't be a bit surprised.
She playfully bites her lip.
That cold water didn't do the trick, did it, Mumsy dear?
Mrs. Waddy quickly opens the door, her lips pursed.
Goodbye, Miss Schoolteacher. I only did it to spite you, you know.
Her mother slaps her.
You're not fit to touch the hem of her garment.
Oh, yes, I am. Just because she's read a lot of books. Books, books, look at them all. I got more out of life at my age than she'll get out of them in all her days. And I'll get a lot more yet. What do you bet me?
Miss Moffat stares off listlessly. Bessie's sharp smile fades and she hurries out.
Well, that's settled. Now, nice cup of tea for everybody.
I'll help you, Barty.
Miss Ronbury and Mrs. Waddy leave. Head bowed, Miss Moffat walks slowly across the room with measured paces. Morgan bursts in.
Has she gone?
Why?
The squire has just told me.
Oh, the fool, the idiotic fool.
And it's true. He thought I knew him.
There is no need for you to upset yourself, my boy. Miss Moffat is going to take care of the child.
You are what?
I am going to adopt the child.
What the devil do you take me for?
Morgan, my boy. We thought it was for the best. What would you like to do?
What would I like to do? It is not a question of what I would like to do, but what I am going to do. I'm going to marry her.
I knew this would happen. I knew.
All I will say is that Bessie Watty and I are going to get married as soon as we can. And that is final.
Come.
Sarah Pugh.
A telegram. They sent it from Penland. I never see the telegram before. Read it, Miss Moffat. I would like to know for once what it says in the telegram.
Miss Moffat opens it and reads. Stone-faced, she slowly lifts her gaze to meet Morgan's.
You have won the scholarship, Morgan.
Gaping, he sinks into a seat.
First Evans, second Faber Isles, third Starling. Congratulations.
Morgan, a hand carrier. Doch, Mr. Jones, doch.
Sarah and Mr. Jones hurry out. Miss Moffat carefully folds the telegram and slides it inside her belt. Focusing on Morgan, she pulls up a chair beside him. He stares off.
Look at me, Morgan.
He turns to face her.
For the first time we are together. Our hearts are face to face, unashamed. The clock is ticking, and there is no time to lose. If there was ever anybody at the crossroads, you are now.
It is no good. I'm going to marry her.
And I'm going to speak to you very simply. I'm going to ask you to change suddenly from a boy to a man. Oh, I understand this has been a great shock to you. But I'm going to ask you to throw off this passionate obstinacy to do the right thing. Have you ever asked Bessie to marry you?
No, never.
Have you even told her you were in love with her?
No, never. But that does not alter the fact that I have a duty to them both.
She has her own plans and does not want the child. And if you do marry her, you know what will happen, don't you? You'll go back to the mine. In a year's time, she'll have left you both. You will start drinking again, only this time you won't stop. And you'll enjoy being that besotted, uncouth village genius who once showed such promise. And it won't be worth it, you know.
There is a child living and breathing on this earth, and living and breathing because of me.
You mentioned the word duty just now, didn't you? Yes, you have a duty. But it's not to this loose little lady, or to her offspring either.
You mean duty to you?
No. A year ago, I would have said duty to me. But that night you showed your teeth, caught me unawares, and I gave you the worst possible answer. I turned sorry for myself and taunted you with ingratitude. I was a dolt not to realize that a debt of gratitude is the most humiliating debt of all. And that a little show of affection would have wiped it out. I offer that affection to you now.
Morgan looks down.
Why are you saying this to me now?
Because as the moments are passing, and I am going to have my way, I know I shall never see you again.
Never again? But why?
If you are not going to marry her, it would be madness to come into contact with the child. And so, as I am adopting the child, you must not come to see me again. That's only common sense.
But
you are being given that push over the wall you asked for.
But you are staying here. How can I never come back? After everything you've done for me.
Miss Moffat knits her brow in thought.
Do you remember for the past 6 months? I've taken a long walk over Mole Horizon every morning for my health.
Yes.
There's a bit of road round a boulder. And there's an oak tree. And under it, the valley suddenly drops sheer. Every morning, regularly, as I turned that corner, by some trick of the mind, I would find myself thinking about you working for your scholarship and winning it. And I experienced something which, after all, is comparatively rare. A feeling of complete happiness. I shall experience it again. No, Morgan Evans. You have no duty to me. Your only duty is to the world.
To the world?
Now that you're going away, there's no harm in telling you something. I don't think you quite realize what your future can become if you give it the chance. I rather made out to the squire that I wanted you to become a writer. Stranger things have happened. You have a great deal now, Morgan. But Oxford will give you the rest.
For what?
Enough to become a great man of our country. If a light come into the mine, you said. Remember.
He glances away and slowly nods.
Yes.
Make that light come into the mine and someday free these children. Oh, and you can be more, much, much more. You can be a man for a future nation to be proud of. Perhaps I'm mad, I don't know. We'll see. It's up to you.
A smile tugs at Morgan's lips.
Yes.
He and Miss Moffat lock gazes. Glancing away, she stands.
I think that's all.
She paces away.
I do not know what to say.
Then don't say anything.
Morgan looks around, then steps uncertainly toward her.
I've been so much time in this room.
And the lessons are over.
They look squarely at each other.
I shall always remember.
Will you? I'm glad you think you will.
Three students run in.
Please, Miss Moffat, the band is out, and they say that Morgan got to come down to Town Hall for Wales to see a real talk.
My band get any heavy?
Right, George.
Dagmar, take
this for Morgan. Yes,
Dagmar.
Morgan, we're waiting for you at Town Hall.
The boys hurry off, and Miss Moffat hands Morgan his scarf. He gazes softly at her, and she manages a faint smile.
Goodbye, Morgan.
She takes a step closer, and Morgan swallows hard. He strides past her out the door. Miss Moffat stares off as the squire enters.
Isn't it grand? I never felt so excited in my life. I'm going outside to have a look at the fun. Makes me very proud of one of my boys getting a scholarship at Oxford. But it wasn't Cambridge.
He leaves. Miss Moffat gazes out the window, clasping her hands at her waist. Mrs. Waddy comes out of the kitchen.
Is he gone?
Yes, Waddy.
Mrs. sent a gentleman over from the public house to see you. What's this? His birth certificate, ma'am.
I had forgotten all about that. Come on, ma'am. You've got to start sometime.
Tears glisten in Miss Moffat's eyes. She clenches her jaw.
Moffat, my girl, you mustn't be clumsy this time.
She tightens her jaw and walks to the window. Outside, a crowd of townspeople cheers Morgan. Men hoist Morgan onto their shoulders. He smiles as they wave their caps.
School tomorrow, the same as usual?
Yes, Ron. Same as usual.
Miss Moffat levels a resolute stare, then gazes out the window, her eyes glistening. Outside, Morgan looks back at the house, and his smile fades. As the crowd carries him forward, he brightens again. At the window, Miss Moffat heaves a deep breath as she watches proudly. Dozens of townspeople fill the road outside the schoolhouse, and Mr. Jones rings the school bell. Miss Moffat watches the crowd pass, the firelight flickering on her tear-stained face. Words appear. The End, a Warner Brothers First National Picture.